Stand by. We're ready with the theme, and I don't hear it. Okay, you back it up. I'll turn the button on, and we'll start the show in 3, 2, 1. Woof.
I need a dollar, dollar, dollar. That's what I need. Hey, hey. Well, I need a dollar, dollar, dollar. That's what I need. Hey, hey. Said I need a dollar, dollar, dollar. That's what I need. And if I share with you my story, would you share your dollar with me?
Oh, that the markets would do better than the show. It's 12:10. This is John, and so here we go now, all the way until 1 o'clock on the Wintrust Business Lunch on WGN Radio. Lots of ground to cover. Our normal reporters are checking in. We've got some extra special guests. And just to follow up real quick here on something that we talked about earlier on this show, I know Ro comically spent some time talking about the mayor that the interview that Anderson Cooper on CNN did with the mayor of Las Vegas yesterday. There's an interesting headline at CNN. Business right now, and it says Las Vegas casinos will not be reopening anytime soon. The mayor of Las Vegas wants Sin City to reopen, but gaming industry workers, casino executives, and Nevada's governor beg to differ. That's why it's unlikely that gamblers will be setting foot inside casinos on the glitzy Las Vegas Strip anytime soon. In a testy interview with CNN's Anderson Cooper Wednesday, Las Vegas Mayor Carolyn Goodman repeatedly called for businesses to return to normal. "I'd love everything open because we've had viruses for years that have been here," she said at one point. Goodman also criticized Cooper when Anderson Cooper showed a graphic from Chinese researchers that showed how easily the coronavirus can be spread in public. "Well, this isn't China. This is Las Vegas, Nevada," Goodman said, prompting a stunned Cooper to retort, "Wow, okay, that's really ignorant." Goodman acknowledged that she does not have the authority to reopen the casinos or other businesses in the city. That call will come from the Nevada governor, and the governor is not rushing to get back into business as usual. In an interview with Cooper after Goodman's comments Wednesday, the governor there said Nevada is, quote, clearly not ready to reopen, and that he will not use Nevada as a control group for the rest of the country. The Nevada Gaming Board issued strict guidelines earlier this week detailing the many steps the casinos will need to take before reopening, and casino employees have also balked at the idea of returning to work. The mayor's statements are outrageous, considering essential frontline workers have been dealing with the consequences of this crisis firsthand. According to the secretary treasurer of the Culinary Workers Union, the folks that would actually be on the front line there in Las Vegas. It's 12:13 on WGN Radio. We'll pause and come back with our first guest. We've got a lot of ground to cover. It's the Wintrust Business Lunch. Jason Heiner joins us from CNET. Jason, welcome back. You're on WGN. How are you today?
Thanks. Great to be here, as always.
You know, I was just chuckling, and this is the least important story maybe, but since I brought it up, why don't you just help me out with this? You're the managing editor at CNET, and I see a story. You can rent a farm animal to lighten up your next Zoom call. That's what I call pivoting, people. That's what I call being nimble. Tell me about this.
Yeah, well, you know, the funny thing is on these Zoom calls or just video calls in general, one of the most exciting things is when people bring in a pet or a baby. You know, that's what gets, I know that's like the most exciting thing in these group calls that I'm in. That's what gets most people fired up. So if you want to really sort of shake things up, you know, you can always have an interesting background. You know, there are funny images and fun images that people use for their virtual background. But the idea is people would really notice and have a good laugh if you had a goat in the back or something like that.
I'm looking at a screen grab of 16 people on a Zoom call, which, by the way, is about 12 too many. But here's this group Zoom call, and the first row, third person is a donkey. Very funny.
Yeah.
Very funny. Yep. So it's a service. I call these people up or online. I can order the animal to, I guess, accept my Zoom invite, and then somebody has a camera and they put him in there, huh?
That's right. It's called Peace and Peas Web Solutions. And so it's just a little bit of fun to help lighten things up during this time when so many people are working from home, so many people are going a little bit stir crazy and could use a good laugh.
Okay, so for 10 minutes, it's $50, Peace and Peas Web Solutions. That's Peace, as in Peace Be With You, P-E-A-C-E, the letter N, and then P-E-A-S, the vegetable peas, Web Solutions. Peace and Peas Web Solutions. They're out of North Carolina. 10 minutes, a donkey or a goat or whatever it could be.
In your Zoom call. Duck, chickens, all of it.
$50. It might be money well spent. Is there a charitable angle to this, or is this just somebody, nothing wrong with that, but this is just somebody making a living here, huh?
I think it's the latter, yeah.
And that's okay, too. I think I'll go with the llama for $50. Talk to me about Apple Watches now. It was just a fashion accessory. Why is it so important to people now?
Yeah, you know, it's interesting. It did start out as a bit of a luxury item, right? There was the Apple Watch edition, which was a $17,000 model. So it was like, okay, is this a competitor with these, like, high-end Rolexes and that, but over time, it's essentially become a very good fitness, wellness, health accessory. It started out with the idea of you want to have a computer on your wrist, kind of like Dick Tracy, but over time, it's just become a slightly smarter Fitbit, right? And now it does lots more things. It can track your heart rate. It can help you with mindfulness and breathing. It can do, of course, track your steps and your activity and send, you know, helpful reminders to make sure you're getting enough activity in every day so that you're staying healthy. But, you know, it has become really a surprise success. I mean, in 2019, so last year, they sold, according to a third-party, you know, data firm, Strategy Analytics, Apple shipped 31 million units, 31 million Apple Watches. The entire Swiss watch industry shipped 21 million, so outsold them by 10 million. So that tells you a lot about how far this has come in 5 years.
And we are now at the five-year anniversary of the watch. Was there any doubt? Because sometimes products roll out. Remember the glasses that were going to virtually put us into different places in the world or act as computers? That did not go well. This did. Was there any doubt that the Apple Watch would be successful?
Yeah, I think there was some doubt. And it's interesting, before Apple launched this, the Google Glass came out, the glasses you're mentioning, which of course fizzled out. Just were ahead of their time. There probably will be glasses eventually. The technology wasn't ready yet. Tim Cook had said, when they asked him about wearables, you know, he famously said, glasses, the face, we don't think that's very interesting yet. But the wrist, that is pretty interesting. So Apple has adapted this. They originally thought it was going to be more of a fashion accessory and the fitness stuff was going to be, an add-on and you're going to be able to do more with the watch. But now it's really something that it can help you with a number of different things, and that's why it's been successful. I think it had a lot of competitors early on. There was Fitbit, Sony, Nike, Samsung, Pebble, Misfit, Jawbone, all these companies were putting out smartwatches at the same time Apple started the Apple Watch, and now it's really just Apple, Fitbit, and Samsung. And then, of course, the sort of various Swiss watch brands, yeah, which are trying to bring more smarts into their watch, but they're all chasing Apple at this point.
I didn't think the watches were pretty enough. I actually thought a beautiful watch is one thing. This looks more like a swatch to me than an expensive or beautiful watch. And I thought the face was too small and that people would be frustrated trying to navigate them. I like to remind our listeners, though, whenever I talk about my dad, that he's a pretty nimble guy at 92. I sometimes talk to my dad, him doing the Dick Tracy thing. Like you said, he uses his Apple Watch effectively. He maybe doesn't use all of the applications of it, but they figured out the interface with that thing. It is a functional gadget, isn't it?
It is very functional, and they keep adding good features to it. They added a walkie-talkie feature now. So I know two people that are in quarantine, one of our staff members, that she just talks to a friend living across the country. They just use that. They hit the walkie-talkie thing and hit it right there. And so it's almost like being in the same room, just sort of chatting with somebody and like yelling to somebody in the other room, like, hey, someone want to talk to you about something, or I want to show you something. You know, they've added the breathe function. They've added the heart monitoring. They've added some emergency features. If you fall, you know, it can automatically, or just press of a button, they can call for you, get you some help. So that's the key. They just keep making it more and more functional and keeping it pretty simple.
Managing editor at CNET, Jason Heiner's on a phone line. The story you all are reporting is about Amazon workers who... Are they going to go through with this, a nationwide protest at 300-plus facilities?
Yeah, so they have. There are a certain number of employees that have been, about 350 workers from about 40 warehouses across the country. You know, they signed a pledge this week that they were going to basically call in sick and not come to work because they want... as a protest for Amazon to take the health measures more seriously. They feel like there needs to be a number of things done that, inside the warehouse to keep the workers safe. There have been people at these warehouses that have tested positive for COVID-19. And, so they want their demands met. And, you know, Amazon has, in some cases, fired a few of these people that have been organizing protests. You know, not outwardly for organizing protests, but for bad language, for harassing other workers. Doing things that are against policy. But it certainly raises some questions about how above board that is, and it's pretty ugly, and the stakes are really high because Amazon is shipping a lot of stuff to a lot of people, and they're hiring a lot more workers right now.
Do you have any numbers off the top of your head on how profitable they're doing, how well Amazon is doing right now?
We'll have to wait until the next earnings season comes out, but you have to believe that all of this, with people not being able, with so many retail locations closed, Amazon saying they're going to, hire another 50 to 100,000 workers. So you've got all kinds of indications that Amazon's getting a ton of business right now. Obviously, it's a logistical, massive logistical challenge to integrate that many workers that quickly. And so, you have to have we have to give them a little bit of understanding with that, but they certainly are going to need to respond to these kinds of requests from workers saying that their safety is not always being taken seriously enough.
What are you hearing about the HBO edition? HBO Max is the channel I'm thinking about. What's the rollout on that, and what are we going to see? I suppose if it's another service, another channel, then people will flock to it right now.
It's true. You know, May 27th is when HBO Max launches. They already have HBO Now, and which is their sort of streaming version. This is going to sort of blow that out and really aim at becoming a competitor with Netflix, with Disney Plus, with the upcoming Peacock from NBC. As well as CBS All Access. With full disclosure, CNET is owned by CBS, Viacom CBS. So they really want to, they have a giant catalog, obviously, with Warner Brothers' great history of producing content and lots of well-known content, including all of the DC Universe material and lots of other things. So HBO Max is going to cost $15 a month. That's the same thing that they charge for HBO Now today. So there are a lot of people already on HBO Now that, it's a sure thing for them. They're like, I'm already paying that. Now I get extra content. That's great. But the key will be, can they get some people to move over from Netflix or Amazon Prime Video if they're Prime customers, that's, you know, a bit of a tough sell because you get a lot more Prime. For most people, Prime Video is a toss-in for all the free shipping that they get for Prime. Or are people going to be willing to cut the cord, you know, finally cancel cable and say, okay, I'm going to add this one. I've already got Netflix. So I'll maybe add Disney Plus too. And I'll just do that. And then I'm finally ready to get rid of cable. I'll get an antenna or I'll do something else. But, you know, I'm ready to save some money and you know, get rid of my cable box and my $100 cable subscription.
The virus has accelerated so many things that maybe were going to happen, but now they're happening right now. And you wonder, yeah, if this will just make the decision easier for people or maybe more necessary for people. But $15 a month, the service will be the home of HBO hits. I'm reading from your articles, such as Game of Thrones, as well as movies and shows from the Warner Brothers film and TV studio and DC Comics. You'll also have in here Big Bang Theory, Sesame Street, and Friends. Friends is going to live at HBO Max.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, there's going to be lots of good content there. There's already a lot of people, like you said, that are paying $15 a month for HBO Now. And you were, you know, driven a lot by Game of Thrones. I'm sure there's a lot of them that canceled after Game of Thrones finished, by the way. So this is one of those things that they are beefing up this subscription to hopefully win back some of those users and potentially, you know, get some new ones and see what they can do in this new world where cord cutting continues to really accelerate. There were AT&T released their earnings this week, which include a big drop in their essentially cable subscribers to their various services, DirecTV, AT&T UVerse, et cetera.
Right. These stories and more at CNET. Managing editor there, Jason Heiner. Always interesting, Jason. Thanks for your time this afternoon.
Absolutely. Thanks for having me.
12:35, market update and a business minute coming your way in just about 10 minutes here on WGN. It's 12:34. We've been seeing a green screen today. We talked to a lot of small businesses, particularly lately here on the Wintrust Business Lunch. There's actually an advocacy group for them in Illinois called the Small Business Advocacy Council. It was headed up in 2010 by Elliot Richardson, and I suppose if ever there was a need for a group like yours, Elliot, it is now. Welcome to the Wintrust Business Lunch.
Thank you so much for having me. I really appreciate it.
You actually authored a letter, or your group is sending one to Governor Pritzker. What are you guys asking the governor to do?
You know, we did send that letter to Governor Pritzker on Friday. And with all of the difficulty that small business owners and entrepreneurs are having obtaining access to capital right now, one of the easiest ways for small business owners to make it through this pandemic is to keep some of the capital that they have. And I said easy, and nothing is easy right now, but that's one of the best ways. And we asked the governor to defer sales tax payments for small businesses, and those are businesses grossing $3 million or less, who have seen their revenue decline 25% or more since March 1st. Hold on to those sales tax payments until such time as the Illinois economy is reopened. And that would, frankly, help small businesses stay in business during this shelter-in-place time, which we anticipate will be extended. So that's what we're requesting.
I guess this would be for essential businesses, right? Non-essential aren't running the register anyway.
Yeah, well, it would be for, you know, restaurants and bars. This extended to them in some ways. For smaller bars and restaurants already, this would be for larger bars, restaurants. It would also be, you know, for retail folks who are doing retail online. You know, really anybody who's in business, and there's a lot of folks trying to run their businesses now virtually as best as they can. And this would be very helpful to them.
You said until such time as our state's economy is reopened. I wonder what the definition of that is.
I think that's a great, well, I don't think that's a great question. And I don't know that that's been defined yet. And that's something we would be very happy to work with the governor on, because obviously the reopening is going to happen in very, very small increments, it looks like. And certainly health and safety is paramount, but we have to do something to help keep our businesses in business right now so that at the end of this pandemic, when we come out the other side, there's small businesses left who have their doors open, and we're not just really left with the very large businesses that were able to weather this storm.
If they own the land or the business that they're operating out of, they've got property taxes too, right? Have you contemplated that?
I think you know, there's a lot of folks who are talking about what are we going to do about property taxes when you look at the broken chain right now of commercial property. You know, you've got tenants, small businesses that can't operate their business, so they don't have money to pay property owners who then might not have money to pay the bank. And what it's really going to take is a comprehensive strategy, and we're asking policymakers to come together and to really formulate a comprehensive strategy for how we're going to keep everybody in business and make it through what might be a prolonged shutdown. So, yeah, property taxes should be part of that equation. Really, everything should be part of that equation right now.
I know it, what you know, and that is if ever a state needed money, it's Illinois. But we're putting everything on hold, it seems, right now, just to keep people afloat. Property taxes affects all of them. As the governor responded about your pitch for sales taxes or any other kind of relief, what's the governor's office saying?
You know, we have not heard back about the sales tax relief. And I think what's important is that business owners are not asking for the forgiveness of sales taxes. They're asking for a deferment so that they can keep operating. They can continue to retain their employees if that's possible. So we haven't heard back. We really want to, and you know, there were a lot of other business organizations on that letter, and we expect that to grow. And we've just got to do something to help Main Street businesses while they attempt to get this access to capital through SBA disaster loans and through PPP loans and through the Straight Treasurer's Fund and through all of these different ways, you know, these loan programs that have been stood up but really haven't operated yet in a way that helps a lot of small businesses.
What do you mean these loan programs that have been stood up? You mean they're working or not working? What do you mean by that?
Established. So, that the PPP loan program was established.
Yeah.
The PPP loan was funded, and the PPP loans ran out of money. And a lot of small businesses were not able to access those funds. A lot of gig employees, very small businesses, didn't have established relationships with banks, so they were not able to get access to those PPP funds. And now it looks like there's going to be another round of funding for the PPP loans, but I will tell you that small businesses are still very concerned that at the end of the day, they're going to be able to access that capital. And when you take a gig employee, you know, if you take a wedding photographer or you take a fitness instructor, right now, if they were their own business, they can't apply for unemployment. The CARES Act does allow a vehicle to apply for unemployment, but Illinois isn't allowing that to happen yet. And at the same time, they're having difficulty getting PPP loans, so, or access to capital, which really leaves them without a way to generate revenue. And that's something that's got to be addressed immediately.
One last thing. I need a short answer to this, but I think it's critical to people. Elliot, what are you hearing from business owners, you just spoke about it briefly, who are trying to get that capital but couldn't? If you weren't quick enough, you were out. How frustrating was it for them? How successful was it for them?
You know, we've heard about some success stories and a remarkable amount of frustration, and it's got to be done right the second time around. So we're telling business owners, talk to your bankers, talk to your trusted advisors, look around for financial institutions. There should be more playing in the space right now that will help a very small business through the process and just get on it really quickly, because there has been a lot of frustration.
Last thing, then, how can folks find out more about you? Is this an organization you're looking to grow?
Oh, yes. We've been growing for a long time. They can go to www.sbacil.org. They can learn about us there. And, you know, we are here to help small businesses, and that's what we're laser focused on.
SBACIL.org, Small Business Advocacy Council, Illinois. Nice to talk to you. Good luck to you, Elliot. We appreciate your time.
Thank you so much for having me on. I really appreciate it.
1242 on WGN. Here's a Wintrust Business Minute.
Wind the clock. It's time for the Wintrust Business Minute, your daily roundup of Chicago area business news. Crane says AbbVie has shifted its operations to help Illinois test more people for COVID-19. The North Chicago drug maker is donating about 40,000 units of viral transport media a week to the state. That material is essential for the COVID-19 testing. Northwestern University biologists have received a federal grant to continue to develop a simple coronavirus test. The money will go toward the development of an easy-to-use quick screen tech device that can test for coronavirus and other infectious diseases. And Chicago Inno says a Chicago AI startup is taking on Grammarly with its software that helps you write error-free sentences. Quillbot has raised $4 million. It's created an online service that helps users construct grammatically correct sentences. And who couldn't use help with that? That's the Wintrust Business Minute. I'm Steve Bertrand.
It's a great idea. I said earlier the screens are green, but they weren't real green. Where are we, Steve?
Well, they were darker green than they are now. The Dow is up 85 points, so that's off a few hundred from its high. The NASDAQ up 22, and the S&P 500 up 5.
Been talking to Orion Samuelson all morning about the farm scene, the agribusiness numbers. What do you know today, O?
Well, let's take a look at what's happening at the Chicago Board of Trade in the grain market at the moment. The July wheat contract is down a penny and a half a bushel at $5.42. July corn contract unchanged, and that puts it at $3.24¾. And the July soybean contract is up 3 cents, and that puts it at $8.45½ a bushel. Livestock futures, Chicago Mercantile Exchange, the trend there under pressure again today with the, let me get the screen up here, and I don't know why it's so difficult at times, but June lean hog contract is up $3.37 a hundredweight. The June live cattle contract is down 1¼ cents per bushel, or no, per hundredweight, and the April live cattle contract is up $1.42 a hundredweight. And we mentioned yesterday afternoon, but let me repeat it, Chinese importers finally buying some U.S. soybeans. They signed deals to buy U.S. soybeans after prices sank to an 11-month low as part of a broad-based commodity sell-off due to the global coronavirus pandemic. The Department of Agriculture said today, yesterday that private exporters reported the sale of 198,000 tons of soybeans to China for the 2019-2020 marketing year. And as I've mentioned several times over the past month, we're going to spend a lot of time reporting postponements and outright cancellations. We've already talked about the annual salute to the dairy industry in McHenry County. Harvard Milk Days at Harvard, Illinois, normally held the first weekend of June Dairy Month. Not the case this year. It will be held in October because of the pandemic concerns. And already had an email from a couple of people saying, what about the Farm Progress Show, which normally is held in late August, early September? According to word from Matt Youngman, who is the manager of the Farm Progress Show, and while the environment is changing quickly, it's still too early for any of the COVID-19 postponements and cancellations to affect plans and quarantines and preparations for this year's Farm Progress Show or for Husker Harvest Days in Nebraska. So, according to Matt, we are moving forward under the assumption that the environment will stabilize by then and we can look forward to the Farm Progress Show coming up for the normal date in late August or early September. So we'll keep you posted on that and all of the other activities that are going to be impacted schedule-wise by the pandemic. And that's your Ag Biz. I'm Orion Samuelson.
1249, this is the Wintrust Business Lunch. Business reporter Amy Guth joins us again with a bevy of stories here. Not all of them bright and sunny. Some folks, though, Amy, are, in fact, going to banks and borrowing money the old-fashioned way to buy houses. But there's a new sort of caveat before the banks, I guess, give the money to the borrowers, right?
That's right. So now, as an extra step, this is really an expansion of what's happened all along. When you go to close on a house, you have to have some, you know, sign some disclosures. Now that disclosure, what lenders are insisting is that disclosure now is very specifically saying my income has not been impacted due to COVID-19, and I, as far as I am aware, it will not be. And that's to prevent somebody from saying, especially maybe a two-income household, if one person took a hit, saying, oh, we can write it out and I'll figure it out. This also gives the lender an extra level of protection. So it's really an expansion of something that's happened all along, but it's yet another example of the ways that different businesses are having to adapt to really unprecedented times.
How long do they expect you to affirm, or for how long do they expect you to believe that you're going to be COVID-proof? I mean, does anybody know if their income isn't going to be affected?
Yeah, that was my question, too. And as it appears that as long as you don't have knowledge of, okay, no one's told me that my, you know, job may be cut in the future or my hours would be reduced or something like that. It's really about I can affirm that I have no knowledge of something like that coming, though I think that's something in the back of a lot of people's minds. So that's a tricky one to really be able to affirm for sure. But I think the lenders do want that extra layer of protection for themselves because under the CARES Act, you can get some mortgage relief. So theoretically, if you wanted to write it out, you know, you could get in a house. But the bankers that you know, in asking around about this, bankers said, you know, that's not something we're seeing. We're seeing people back out of the deal much sooner than that if their income was impacted. But it's just that one more layer. If someone really, really, really was going to go that extra mile and say, I'm just going to bet that it's going to be okay, since people often apply for a mortgage much further out than when they actually close on the house, just to have that extra level of protection there was really important to lenders.
Well, I guess nobody benefits if you're borrowing money that you can't pay back. You don't, and the lender doesn't either. But if you went ahead, snuck in, knowing full well your income's about to get hit, and then you get relief, you're sort of getting the mortgage without having to pay for it. The bank doesn't like that. This sort of forestalls that, huh?
Yeah, that's exactly right. That's the particular area where I think lenders are trying to buffer against that very sort of thing there, which, you know, that mortgage relief is there for people who need it, but they certainly don't want people to take advantage of it or anything like that.
You want to give us some unemployment claims numbers?
Yeah, so it's Thursday, and that's when those numbers come out from the Department of Labor. We saw that go up 4.4 million this week, up to just over 26 million. So that's about an 18.3% unemployment rate. And what that does is that's right in alignment with a lot of economists have been modeling this and looking at what it'll look like. At this point, this is on track with the model for economists' predictions that the unemployment rate by this summer, at some point during the summer, would be within that 25% range, which is the peak that was recorded in 1933 during the Great Depression. Fitch Ratings also predicted that the GDP would shrink by around 6% this year. So, again, very unprecedented times. What's interesting about the number this week is what we've added to it. What we're starting to see is as states are gaining the capability to process unemployment claims for people who are self-employed or contractors like gig workers, Uber drivers, things like that, as states are expanding that capacity, we're starting to see those numbers reflected. I predict we will be able to see many more of those numbers. That number will go up as more states are able to process claims from people who are self-employed or who are, you know, contract gig workers.
And I want to make sure I heard you clearly, Amy. So the model predicts that unemployment peaks in the summer and that unemployment will be 25%?
Well, we don't know when it will peak, but what's on track right now would be at the peak that was recorded in 1933. So it would look like the same numbers of the Great Depression by summer if we're still seeing the numbers that we continue to see. That's according to a lot of models, economists' predictions.
The word is testing, testing, testing. People want to know about the tests. AbbVie is on the forefront of this. What's happening there?
That's right. We're seeing AbbVie and Abbott right here in Chicago doing a lot of work in this space. And so what they have done is they have donated 40,000 pieces or units of what's called viral transport media, VTM. What it is it's material that allows a specimen to be able to stay in a laboratory until that lab can process that specimen. So it helps expand testing capacity. They've donated 40,000 units of that BTM a week to the Illinois Department of Health. And Governor Pritzker has said that BTM swabs and things like that are really crucial to be able to expand the testing to his 10,000 tests a day goal. AbbVie has also transformed one of their own labs into a lab available to run tests for vulnerable patients, like uninsured residents and things like that. They've donated $35 million to fund 20 field hospital units in partnership with the International Medical Corps. Two of those, of course, are here in Chicago. And they are starting to partner with some other health organizations to test the effectiveness of their HIV drug called Keletra to see if it is effective in treating COVID-19. So they are suddenly doing quite a bit. They donated quite a bit, a big supply of Keletra in late January to Chinese health authorities to use as an experimental option. And I think that's part of this testing that they're trying to roll out to see if it would be effective against this virus.
Any last stories that are jumping out at you? We've got about a minute left.
Well, gosh, there's so many, I think, today. I think one of the biggest, something that's kind of like interesting, that's not necessarily like big and COVID related, but that's just kind of an interesting thing that's kind of flown under the radar a little bit today, is that Kanye West, through a record search, it's come to light that Kanye West has bought his childhood home on South Shore Drive. It has changed many, many hands since his mother sold it. The person who bought it after that went into foreclosure, and then it was going to be an arts incubator at one point. But through a record search, it's been discovered that Kanye has bought this house. No word yet on what he's going to do, but he has a permit to renovate it. So it's unclear if it's going to be an arts incubator or if he's just going to renovate it for housing.
I suppose if you're somebody like Kanye West, you were so attached to your mom, so attached to Chicago, you hate to see your house fall into any measure of disrepair or use that you don't like. Here's my prediction, Amy, a church. He's going to turn it into the Church of Kanye.
You know what? I wouldn't put it past him.
It's nice to talk to you today, Amy.
Nice to talk to you. Thanks so much.
Amy Guth on the Wintrust Business Lunch, WGN Radio News, then Anna DeVlantis, all coming up.